Man, I didn't know there was so much beef between Doors and Carver.
Have we begun?
Yeah, we got.
Don't pervert a handbook passage to me, okay?
Welcome to a Lorehounds and Properly Howard joint production covering Severance on Apple TV Plus, Season 2, Episode 2, Goodbye, Mrs. Selvig. I'm John. With me today, the fetid moppet himself, David.
I eat your shitty cookies. I don't need...
Well, you just stole my line for Anthony.
Oh, no, did I?
I was going to say, he ate your shitty fucking cookies. Well, Anthony's here, too. That was my line for him. Steve, he always brings a pineapple when he's sorry.
It's true.
I have a question for all of you, if you're ready for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Would you rather be the victim of lactation fraud or suffer from brain circumcision?
I'll take the lactation fraud. Thank you.
I always felt like one begets the other.
John?
Man, if it's lactation fraud like in the show, I feel like nobody was actually in danger in that situation. So I guess I'll take that.
The question is, did she latch or not? I mean, it's like, how fraudulent can it be?
Maybe she knows what she's doing.
So this is a catch me if you can thing. It's like, look, if you can fly the plane,
right?
If you got everyone home safely, who's complaining?
Oh my God. All right. We've got a lot going on today. So David, can you just give quick housekeeping before we get into our hot takes and everything?
Absolutely. You can get ad-free versions of this podcast without a subscription. You can spend $5 on a season pass. There's a link in the show notes. There are going to be bonus episodes. The first bonus episode is out now. We're calling it the Supply Closet. And I talk with Nicole from Nevermind the Music, who's actually a professor of psychology. We talk about brains, structures of brains, where personality lives in the brain. And we get into some theory crafting because Nicole is loving the show and actually talking about like where the Severance chip is implanted and how that's actually they're on the show. They're putting it in the right place.
They get into glands. I listened to it. It was fantastic. They get into all the glands. Gland. If you're a big gland head.
At the end of this podcast, there's a 2-minute. There's a 2-minute.
Wait. I want to just call out the phrase "gland of the lost" because I think I talked over it or someone talked over it, and it is worth considering. Please continue.
There's a 2-minute clip at the end of this podcast before the outro. Credits, there'll be a little clip. And so you can hear Nicole and I talking about what we're going to talk about. So head over to Supercast, $5 season pass. Or if you want to become a regular subscriber to the Lorehounds, you can head over to our Patreon or our Supercast. Those links are all in the show notes.
You get so much more stuff that way. I mean, come on.
There was an error. If you did try to sign up for it, there was an error on the Supercast thing a couple days ago. They resolved it. People were getting caught in a reCAPTCHA hell, just looping back and forth about identifying bridges and motorcycles.
They were refining the macro data forever?
Basically, I think so.
All right.
I never can tell a bridge from a motorcycle, to be
honest. You can send feedback to severance@thelorehounds.com. And you can join us on our Discord, our community Discord server. We've got a lot of folks chatting. We have channels set up for each of the episodes. We even have a grand theory crafting channel, which we call the macro data. What do we call it? The macro data theory refinement channel. It's pretty fun. Please like, rate, and review the podcast and Apple Podcasts. And lastly, this is a very specific thing. Patty L, if you're listening, Patty L, your email is not working. We're getting bounced notifications on Supercast. So let me know. I don't have any other way to get a hold of her except to say something on the podcast. So email me at severance@thelorehounds.com.
All right.
Just so you know, Patty L could well be my mother. I just want you to know.
That's very true.
All right.
Is she a lactation consultant?
She was.
Really?
It would track to an earlier conversation that was not on record that about Anthony's inability to manage technology. He probably
or latch, up her email. By the way. Inability to handle technology or latch correctly. And yes, my mother, Patty L., was a lactation consultant for many years.
Oh, wow.
So it could be that, and also not great with technology. We could solve all of these problems just with a simple phone call.
Like the classic statement always says, those who can't lactate, consult.
Okay. All right. Let's get into our hot takes. We'll bring Alicia in for
a second.
Please
try to enjoy each hot take equally and not show preference for any above the others.
Steve, since you're full of jokes today, what did you think of the episode?
This was great. I was jonesing for some outies, and I actually liked that things kind of, you know, there's so much happened in the first episode, and we talk about this all the time, about like how much can be managed in an economy of time, yet it doesn't feel like anything's getting short shrift. This one, I loved the pacing. I really, I'm so intrigued by the Audi world and how now it's just oddly weirder than the Innie world. And just the more layers of like, what is going on? Why is Great Doors such a understated signage? I don't, you know, and the name. I mean, it's like that place for sure had a focus group that settled on Great Doors as the title. I loved it. I loved how it picked up from the season prior. Because that's the thing, is like, I feel like I knew there was no parade, there was no 5 months. So it was a really cool way to just get right into it, answer a lot of questions, at least in terms of just some of the specifics of the time, but not like really answer any major questions, right? Because I think the big question at the end of the episode is the question that we're all asking in turn.
Yeah, that's a good one. Anthony?
Yeah, I'm gonna take issue. I think at the end of the episode, I did agree with you, Steve, that there were no big questions answered. And I was a little disappointed, but after rewatch, I think one of my biggest questions was indeed answered. So here comes the hot take.
Okay.
At the end of last season, I was the most perplexed by Selvig's motivations.
Mm.
But by the end of this episode, I feel like I've got a good handle on this, and I could be wrong, but this is what has sated my curiosity. I think that Lumen is both cult and business. And some people are in it for the religion, and some people are in it for the power, right? I guess both of those things are kinds of power, right? So some people are in it for sort of the power that a corporate, a major corporation will afford. And some people are true believers. I think Cobell is a true believer. I think she believes in the core principles. I think that she has a shrine in her house. I think was very invested in whatever they were trying to accomplish on the Severance floor. Whatever is happening, she's in it because it is going to bring her religious gratification. I don't think she cares about the corporate structure of it. And so she's not a really good candidate for a big cover-up. So I'm not saying that she's a good person. I think that she's a cult leader. So that makes her a problematic character for sure. But I don't think I really understood at the end of the last season what really motivated her. Is she on Mark's side? Is she on the corporation side? And what I've come to understand about her is that she's in it for the religion side of Lumen.
For Keir, not the Egans.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I guess Keir over Lumen or something like that.
Yeah.
And it explains a lot of her weird behavior. You know, she's acting like someone who will do anything to bring about the second coming or something like that. She's not really in it simply to, I guess, make Lumen look good on a political level.
You separate, or you seem to when you mentioned that you discovered that Lumen was both cult and business. Is that atypical for cults and or businesses?
So I'm glad you brought that up. I think if you think of the word cult in a religiously sort of technical term, like cult usually has a negative connotation. But in terms of religious studies, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. If you think of it in terms of like a religious study technical term, like cult and culture have the same root. And so it doesn't necessarily, there's not a necessary line between them. And so whenever a big
business and getting busy, but those are two very different things.
That's true. If a business is trying to create a culture, it is trying to create some kind of corporate ethos, right? Cult is just a religious side of that equation. So I think for people, maybe people like Milchek, it's both. You know, maybe there is no line between the cult and the culture. But I think for Selvig, one of these things is dominant in her motivation. And one of these things she just couldn't care less about. She couldn't care less about the politics of the corporation. She cares deeply about whatever the religious outcome is for what's happening on the Severance floor.
I think the least believable thing to me about that is just that she went to the Myrtle Egan School for Girls, which is essentially, you know, Catholic school for Egans, for Kears, and nobody comes out of Catholic school a Catholic.
True.
So I don't know about that. No, I'm just kidding. But I do think that actually does lend credence to your theory.
Well, let me just say one more thing. I think that you will find this in most religions. People who are smart enough to recognize that there's corruption in the organization. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they retreat back to what they think the core principles of the thing are, so they can kind of stick around for it. Right? And I think there's a great analogy here with the Mormon Church, but also with any religious system. You've got people that will abuse the power of it, and then you've got the true believers who are in it for some other reason. And they may be as deeply deluded as anyone else, but I do think that there's a difference between people who really buy the mythology and people who see it as an avenue to power.
Right.
Well, when I worked at a major corporation, it's interesting because like I'll take the other side of that coin and kind of further lend credence, I think, to your theory, but also saying that the line is very blurred is that this corporation, you know, there was so much emphasis on the founder and how the founder, like, I mean, I started in the garage and made this device, and this device is saving lives, and then now look at it today, it's this multi, you know, billion-dollar corporation, but there was so much emphasis on the founder, and the founder was this almost cult hero, right? And not thinking of him as somebody who was trying to make a buck or trying to profit off of understanding disease and disease management, but it was, this person was out to heal and make the world better. I mean, this lore just keeps on going. So then you would, like, as you would advance, as you would spend more time there, your reward, your service awards would come in the form of these, like, medallions, and these medallions would have, like, his quote on it. And, like, there were those that were just, like, full on buying into the, like, this is all about bettering the world and saving lives. And then there are people like me that are like, just keep that check coming. Mm-hmm. And I'll wear the badge or whatever it might be. So there is a capitalistic tendency. There is this sort of like, you can separate the two, but you can also say what needs to be said in order to kind of keep moving up the ladder. Right. And I think both cults and business have these tier effects, and almost regardless of your motivation is how you can progress. I mean, you can be a secular person in a church who's very successful as long as you sort of play the role and say the right things. Mm.
This is the first time I'm learning that you worked for George Foreman selling his grills, Steve.
David, let's get your take.
Well, I get bored halfway through the episode and turned on Special Ops Lioness, so I needed Zoe Saldana and some guns.
And a giant helicopter.
With really muscular men and big facial hair.
But one short fat guy just to round out the crew.
That's right. I see you too are a devotee of Special Ops. He can crank him out too, man. That guy. He's what's his name? The producer of it.
Sheridan, yeah.
Yeah, Sheridan. He's a machine. I can't gush overly too much about this episode. It was sublime. It was incredible. There was a moment in Dune 2 where there's one particular scene at the very early on where some of the enemy troops are floating up the side of this rock. And something flipped in my brain with however Villeneuve was, you know, playing with the cinematography and the tone and the color and the background music and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, this is the magic of cinema. Like, I was transported out of my body. And I was like in this blissful state of like watching these moving pictures. And last night there was a scene where Helena and Mr. Milchick are talking in the corridor before she goes to talks to Miss Kolvig. Is that is that her right name?
Kovelvig,
that's what it is. And
I think we can all agree on that nomenclature.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate. The camera dollies backwards with Milchick walking down the corridor, and then we switch to an exterior view of the building, and then the camera follows Helena. She's walking through the hallway, and we're seeing the exterior of the building while Milchick is still walking down away. So we're getting this perpendicular moving away while the camera's moving sideways. And then I had that same sort of transformative moment. I was like, oh, the magic of cinema.
Yeah.
And then there were scenes later where they were editing, like with Milchick riding his motorcycle and it was fading in and out of
That's the Milkmobile.
with a magnificent helmet, with the scene fading out with different characters on their faces, the colors, the extreme close up of the eyes, that just this whole visual thing that they created just broke me. And I don't think I'm ever going to be the same again, because this is just some of the most exquisite television cinematography that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, those doors going back and forth, rotating during the conversation with Dylan in the job interview were mesmerizing.
And them sitting opposite each other, the way they balanced the shots. There's blue all over this episode. There's a great scene where Milchick is talking with Mark Scout later. Mark has got the sort of institutional green behind him, and Milchick has the ultra blue behind him. It was just phenomenal. And Tramell Tillman is unbelievable. His acting in this is incredible.
Yeah, interesting use of blur at times, mm-hmm. in shots, like especially like lower frame.
A lot of negative space stuff, like they would block it way over on the right or the way over the left, and then the whole other side of the screen, there's just nothing there.
Even the way that the Pips sign is all the way to the right in that big landscape shot, and like the trees to the top over the mountains almost look like, it took me a while to keep look. I just kept focusing on them. Are they airbrush? Is this like Truman Show stuff in the background? You know, mm-hmm. There was enough there visually to add to so much of the mystery and just so much of the richness of what's going on. Yeah, I concur.
Did you clock the parking lot when Mark is getting out of his car and all those old sort of, you know, I don't know. I don't want to call them middle class cars.
It just felt very like, you know, whatever the lowest end Buick is.
Exactly.
Is there a catalog for that? Like, who?
Was that where are they digital? These? Yeah. Was that digital? Was that just a few of them? And then they digital, I don't know. It was incredible. It was seamless. It was absolutely seamless. There were so many funny one-liners as we've been tossing out. So the writing is so good.
The acting is right. I agree.
The acting is just on another level. And I guess my only criticism is I didn't really care for the new opening credit sequence.
Oh yeah. I thought it was spooky and great. I really like that.
It's a little jarring for me. It's a little AI, weird shaped bodies, and
I don't think it's AI. This was actually, I saw a TikTok on this. Ben Stiller was on Instagram. He was scrolling through and he saw this animator who had like a really spooky kind of thing, and he hired him off of Instagram to do the season one and season two animations.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay. It could happen to anyone, right?
All right.
I believe that they also do an Alt J video, if I recall.
I don't know.
Okay, well, I was trying to be hip.
We can find that out.
Okay, I don't know.
We'll take care of that in post if need to.
Just one little thing on the title sequence, since we're talking about it. Ben Stiller said that the idea for the balloons in the first episode came from the art in the title sequence.
Okay.
The artist just decided to do the whole balloon motif, and he thought, well, let's bring balloons into the first episode. And that's where we got the...
Yeah, that's cool.
That wonderful line, enjoy your balloons.
Along with fetid nice. Moppet. That's my new...
Oh, gosh. Fetid moppet. Was it the first line of this episode?
Other than like flashbacks, I think.
Yeah,
so.
Other than the flashback audio.
Okay.
It was the first character to camera.
I had to pause it. I was like, hey, look, the fetid moppet now. And then I wondered, like, am I going to have to pause every line? Is that what's going to happen?
This episode was almost like that.
It was almost like trying that. To make fetid moppet work.
And it was just such an utterance of just erupted out of him. Just, oh, fetid moppet.
Which, I mean, come on. It's the same level of ridiculousness of Rebecca saying, don't blame the baby. Like, like, why is he calling her a fetid moppet? She had no control over what happened to her. Why is he upset with her?
Oh, I thought it was like a jokey pet name, and he was testing if it was her now. That's how.
Oh, is it like her?
I thought he was actually calling her a stinky child.
Is that like her talisman in the Inception movie? Yeah, is that like that?
Oh, I never watched Inception. That's on my list of things I need to watch. But also now I think that I've heard so much about it that I would not enjoy it if I watched it, and that's just unfortunate.
Well,
but
that is an interesting take on that, John, because that would make better sense if it was sort of like some kind of key
inside joke. I thought. That's what I thought it was.
Okay. It's sort of like a way to tell, like, are you really you?
Yeah, that's what I read it as.
Okay, that's
helpful. But what would the innie have said? Like, what you talking about?
Would have looked at him strange, I thought. Or, yeah, you know? I don't know.
But that's what Devin says.
There is a Mr. Drummond in this episode, so I think it's appropriate.
Yes. Devin says to Mark, what's my name? And he says, Persephone. And she says, can you spell it? And, you know, so that's like, that was their little code.
That was their inside joke.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting.
I just took it as an eruption of frustration, and he had nothing else to say. But
yeah, that could have been
an odd thing to say if you've got nothing else to say.
It's true. You stinky child. Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody says odd things in the outer world here in the old town.
John, what about you?
You know, I think I'm going to mostly just echo what people say, so I'm not going to talk for long. I just think that I want to talk about pineapples. And other than that, great episode. Theories. Great episode. Like Anthony said, didn't really solve a ton of stuff, but gave us a lot more context. I feel more confident in my theories, not less, and I'm excited to get into the theory crafting. So
I saw I was not watching Special Ops Lioness. I was actually watching some Star Trek Discovery on Paramount, and I saw an Apple TV streaming ad, and the clips that they were playing of what's yet to come this season are like made my eyes pop out of my skull. I was like, what the F are we in for? So I think for all of our great theories, which, you know, I think are not half bad,
we're in for so much more, I think, in this season. 100%. No, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not countering anything you were saying. I just think that there's so much more that is yet to be revealed.
Yeah. No, I think so too. I think you're right. Although I haven't seen that trailer and I don't want to.
No, yeah. It really was like, oh my God, it was disturbing.
It shows up on various things I have and I kind of try to look away, but I do see just enough to be like,
So there were scenes that actually made me think of Yellow Jackets. Like, what the hell is going on? People wearing antlers on their heads and shit. I was like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. All right.
So let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get into our full breakdown.
Hey, everyone. David here. And like a certain author once wrote, your so-called boss may own the clock that taunts you from the wall, but the hour is yours. And we're using our hours to bring you comprehensive coverage of Severance Season 2. Here's something really simple we're doing. A season pass for just $5. That's it. One payment, no subscription, no complexity. So what exactly is a season pass? It's a dedicated ad-free feed that gives you permanent access to all of our weekly episodes for Season 2, our exclusive Supply Closet bonus series, and Steve and Anthony's complete Season 1 rewatch. In our Supply Closet episodes so far, we've had fascinating conversations with the team from Nevermind the Music. Mark broke down the four signature chords of the main musical theme and how they connect to the show's themes, while Nicole has explored the neuroscience behind different types of memory, where personality lives in the brain, as well as brainwave oscillations and reintegration. We've got more exciting conversations planned. We'll be announcing those soon. Look, we know everyone's dealing with subscription fatigue these days. That's why we made this super straightforward. $5, one time, everything's included. Two clicks, and you're done. And while we can't promise you any goats, we can promise all of our episodes will leave you feeling just as refreshed as any wellness session. Head over to lorehoundsnetwork.supercast.com to get your season pass. You can also find the link in our show notes below. Need help? Visit us at lorehounds.com and use our contact page.
And remember, should you find yourself questioning which version of you is listening to this podcast, that is the version that needs to listen most.
All right, everyone, we've got a lot to talk about here. So let's talk about, I've divided into five plot lines based on the characters and then the meetings last we could talk about. Just on Helena, Audi Helena deals with the fallout of the Macrodat uprising, sending Milchick on a mission to deal with the Audis. She offers Cobell an apology and a promotion to the Severance Advisory Committee. A made-up thing, which she agrees to consider.
Agrees.
She then records a false apology, pretending that her innie's outburst was a drunken joke of her outie. She watches her innie interact with Mark S., including their kiss. After Mark's plea to the board, she is required to return to Lumen as Heliar. I mean, a lot of great stuff here. The you don't value me, you fear me with Cobell.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that when she's doing her video, she goes, it was a lot non-Lumen medication that I took.
For an arm rash.
Yeah.
I think
Wait, can I just say, an arm rash, she was wearing a sleeveless dress.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well,
Did she say arm?
Oh, yeah, she did. She said arm rash.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I think Anthony's theory is interesting about Cobell being a true believer while Helena is in it for the power and they're using... Right, she's an apparatchik, you know, right? She's using that. Is that the right way, use of that phrase, that word? She's using the structures of power to maintain power, where I think Anthony's right in that Cobell is a true believer.
Yeah, and the idea that like a lot of times I think, going back to Anthony's discussion about like kind of religious institutions, you see it in churches where maybe the pastor's son takes over, right? And like, mm-hmm. it's almost like multiplicity style. The more you get removed from your source as you make further copies, the maybe they get less. They're more about the legacy, and the legacy becomes a little bit more about preserving. You know, maybe the business side, or just making sure that the organization is healthy and can continue for the next generation. And so that generation building becomes the priority over maybe what the initial mission was that found it, so to speak.
Right.
I wonder if Miss Huang also was at this girls' school that Miss Cobell was at, and if this is the same trajectory that Cobell had, whereas she started as a child, like shadowing the head of the severed floor, and then she worked her way up, and that's why she feels so slighted. This is what her entire life has led up to since she was like a child.
Somebody posted in one of our Discord channels, I'm trying to find it now, like a side-by-side of Mrs. Huang. Here it is. It's in the episode 1 chat, and it was Hibby Hibbity who does it, and that has Mrs. Huang standing next to, and I don't know where it came from, but it's a picture from the school of a young woman in pigtails and wearing like a crossing guard style, but also sort of a young Communist Party style outfit. And I don't think that they're the same person, but there's a similarity there of, so I think this school definitely is part of the fabric here.
Huh. That scene, which I don't think I picked this up until the second time, but I thought it was really interesting when Helly was watching her any kiss mark.
Mm-hmm.
That you almost have a reversal of voyeurism. Like, I think that for the first season, these innies almost worshipped their outies as gods. It's like, I wonder what's happening on the other side. I wonder what they're doing. I wonder what kind of muscle shows they're up to. And it was almost like the outies were something to
kind of like Tron, right? Yeah, the programmers.
Kind of, yeah, they were really invested in sort of their real lives on the outside, right? Mm.
Helly, what is my Audi like? Yeah.
Helly or Helena is using kind of her innie persona as a kind of voyeuristic gratification.
Mm.
So I thought that was an interesting reversal. It's almost like innie Helly is living a fuller life than exterior or Audi Helena.
Are we to infer that like maybe they're just watching all the time and this is not her first time taking a look, or?
I don't know how many people are working for Lumen. Like, these are enormous rooms. They're enormous rooms with very few people in these rooms.
Well, it's the night shift. This is where the gala was going on. I mean,
I don't think Helly can watch all that often, though. I mean, she's watching in this moment. Are other people watching? Potentially.
Yeah, that's my she's point. Been in. It's like you would need a lot more eyes if you're going to watch every moment of these innies, right? So,
And about that kiss, it's a really passionate kiss. It's a really emotionally loaded kiss. And I don't wonder if Helena, like you're saying, has that jealousy because she doesn't have that in her life. And her innie has found love in.
And replaying that line is so key too, right? Like, you know, in case we don't come back, or in case we do. And to the point where, like, there was a moment, and, you know, I think maybe, you know, so much is done with facial reactions in this episode.
Oh, my God.
And I think her reaction suggested to me when she made a reaction immediately, which is, or in case we do, like the sense of like, oh, I kind of want to see what happens with these two. And the only way to do that is to reunite them.
And I think it's an interesting question is from episode 1, was that Helena or was that Helly R? I still think it's Helena.
I do too.
Yeah, I'm Helena pilled. I think it's because there's another clue later, and I'll just call out somebody who said this. There's a clue. Pausin 20 and Eon said, Helena's key card didn't beep when she scanned it going into the elevator. There was a beep with all the others.
I was paying attention to that too. Yeah. Because I was looking for every clue in that when she went to the elevator. I was trying to find every element there.
I saw that comment. And then when I was doing my second watch today, it did beep when she inserted it.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, regardless, we did not see her in the elevator. We did not see her change or anything.
No,
I think they know. See, here's what I'm worried about, though. I think that we are getting baited into some kind of conspiracy that's going to be completely a separate point to the main mystery. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be talking about this for 3 weeks. And Ben Stiller is going to be like, ha ha, you weren't looking at the goats.
Elena's going to become Petey and we're going to be like, wait, oh my gosh, that was that same season.
Oh my God.
I found it pretty interesting too that Helena is, I mean, she's the daughter, and but yet she is so I just got the sense that there's a lot of she had a lot of authority.
Yeah, she's at like power. The VP level or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you get to see a little reversal with her and Cobell. You know, here I'm your boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Cobell is definitely not taking that advisory committee assignment, right? That's what I read.
I think so.
I'm not sure.
It was this soft, like, oh, I'll consider that.
I think she's gone. Maybe she'll come back, you know, season finale or something like that. I think that I think that her vehicle is called a rabbit. And
yes,
I think that she was meant to. I think she always had a little bit of rabbit in her blood, and she was gonna bolt it once at some point.
Mm. Mm. Interesting.
She's gonna go off to the caves and be find the source, find the purity of her belief, her values.
A Franciscan monk of the Lumen.
She's not done with Kier. That's the one thing I know about Cobell. She's not done with Kier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know if she's going to come back as an ally to the innies or what.
Yeah. So there's a couple other thoughts on that kiss from the Discord. Chumbaruni, which, what a name, said that scene of Helena watching her innie kiss Mark like she's never had physical intimacy before was very telling. I love it. You can see the TV showing them kissing in her eyeball.
Mm-hmm.
Such a cool shot. And Abby was saying, a bit unclear still, if it's Innie Helly or Outie Helly. Outie Helly did seem intrigued. Perhaps Helena went back as Helly to check things out. For me, I could see it both ways, right? Is let's see what happens with my Innie and that Innie. Or let's see if I have chemistry with that Innie too.
Or if Mark S. is a house divided. And maybe if he's attracted to Helly R., he'll be less interested in finding Miss Casey.
Mm, that's a good point.
That's a really interesting question. Because I was talking with Nicole on the bonus episode about personality and where do you reside in your brain, and where, if they're severing these memories and these different kinds of memories, you know, how are you the same person? And so I almost read it as Helena's jealous of her innie, and so she wants some of that. But then if Mark S. is, you know, the innie, is like getting a vibe shift from her, like, oh, you're not Helly R., you're not the same, right? Mm. Then, yeah, that's gonna be an interesting source of dramatic tension there.
Yeah. Whatever the case is, we have confirmation that Mark is the key to whatever they're doing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This company
has to finish this project.
Yes. This company is going to move heaven and earth to make sure that Mark S. is at his station. And if it takes Helena pretending to be his love interest, I think that they're going to do it.
That's a good segue.
And only 20% up. And he's like, wow. I think 50% would have lit his red flags off. I think they actually picked that as like a generous but not red flaggy amount.
Yeah, I almost thought 20 was high.
Yeah.
20 is crazy high in corporate America.
Yeah. We did have a lot of feedback on why is Mark so special. Zatoichi, Pazin20, Millie all wrote in and basically said, you know, why is Mark special? what was the order of the Gemma versus Mark special thing. I think Zatoichi summed it up most concisely. I was thinking of the cloning of Miss Casey theory. What if it was Mark's project? What if he's been building his wife's soul for this new body? Yeah. Would even severed Mark be the best for that project, since he might intuitively know what numbers to pick to create this version? I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think that that is why these regular interactions between any Mark and Miss Casey are important. It's to kind of remind him of how he feels about this person. And then when he goes back to work, everything about the numbers is about feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something about reconstructing Miss Casey or doing something with this particular person as maybe, I don't know, a prototype or a guinea pig for Kier or something like that.
So they sent her back down to the testing floor, right?
Yep.
So maybe she's a tester mod, the one that we've seen. And the other thing is that Cobell,
Cobelvig.
Cobelvig, it's like
you're not going to get head. It, man. Just it's give it up.
My brain. Cobell is so interested in watching and monitoring the relationship between Casey and Mark. Yeah. She's really keyed in on them. And she's monitoring him outside as well to see if, as Melchick says, you know, that positive feeling is going to come back out and up for you. You know, she's monitoring both sides of that of Mark.
Is anybody concerned that there's too many cloning clues at this point, to the point where we start wondering if maybe this whole thing is to, like, as you were saying, like, oh, this is, it got us, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's as good and it's fine, right? I mean, it's fine to kind of figure things out, because then the show can continue to develop these things out. Because I think part of there's two things. Do we know how long this series is intended to go?
I don't think we know,
but I know that Ben Stiller has the ending known. Like, he is not going nowhere. He is going to a destination.
Right. Okay. So which is good. So the question is, like, can this show exist if the big clone mystery, if that's what it is, whatever the mystery is revealed, and then now, like, because this is almost the whatever this mystery is, once we figure out what they're doing, is that going to be when Sam and Diane get together and the show just doesn't have that chemistry anymore, and we're just going to follow through with it, and we're just like, all right, let's see what happens. Like how much of this show, and I don't think that it relies solely on mystery, because there are so many wonderful aspects to it, whether it's just visual, is it the acting, the incredible one-liners, in the same world as all this, like, creepy, you know, tension exists. But the mystery is, like, I mean, that's what kind of gets us all frothy, right? So it does make me wonder, like, if are we going to find everything out at the end, or will we find things out and then now it's the aftermath? Is that how the show's going to go? Because it does feel like if it's getting to the point where it's the latter, where it's like, oh, we'll deal with aftermath of discovering this mystery. I mean, you could get to it this season or next, I guess, and we could be moving towards that. And that might be why we're getting so many clues to cloning, where it's like, all right, you guys figured that out, but you don't really know how it's going to play out. It's hard to say.
I love that Sam and Diane have their own complete wiki page just about their relationship.
Right. Look, how many seasons is Cheers? I was watching Cheers like a year ago. I was like, man, season this did not age well, but it's fun.
Six seasons?
No, it's like 11 seasons.
Yeah, it's like 11
seasons. It's like a crazy amount of seasons.
And
it went on for another like six seasons without Diane.
Mm-hmm.
With Ally.
Kirstie Alley. Don't sleep on Kirstie Alley's Rebecca Howe character, by the way. She's got some really, really great scenes.
I've always called her Rebecca. Can I just say that Rebecca never disappoints. I love it's almost like Rick, and who is the personality that would be so over the top that they would ignore and annoy Rickon? I love that, like, even Rebecca annoys Rickon. She's just an extra level of too much for even Rickon to take.
So Heather's been, like, you know,
theory building as well. And she thinks that she's in on the cloning aspect. She's in on the idea that we get these innies that sort of come into the world. They have enough information to sort of manage things, but they're kind of, they range between like kind of preschool mentality to adolescent. And then she's like, then you go to the outside world and it feels like there's a lot of, Severance floor rejects that are just wandering around, right? Like Rickon being one of these guys that knows just enough how to type, but maybe not as well to spell, right? Like, and there's just this element of like he knows that he should be wary of Milchek, but he's easily distracted by a magnificent helmet. You know, like there's just elements of these, these people are like kind of half baked. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. And then looking at, talking about cloning and seeing, you know, the Dylan, and I think it's what Mr. Sabrisa, or I forget exactly his name, but like, obviously they're parallel, but there's so much like similarities that adds to the cloning element that sometimes I feel like, okay, it's a little heavy on the concept of cloning. Like maybe they're not pure replicas. Like maybe Rickon and Mr. Drummond are coming from the same, you know, ooze that they're making, right? Like there's similarities in how people are looking or maybe behaving that suggests that there's a lot of like beta testing going on here. And Severance is like the next step of that, right? Like they've been doing it in other fashions, like pre-Severance. And then this is the world that was created from that. And they're like, well, it's just not, this isn't good enough to bring Kier back. Let's try this other form and then we'll use that. Like it's all like an evolution of an attempt to bring Kier back.
So this is kind of like a dog training program where it's the best and the brightest that end up being service dogs.
Mm.
But then there are a bunch of reject dogs that didn't quite make it through the school. But
oh boy.
And so this town is populated by the reject service dogs.
This dog will help you get your milk, but it'll also bite a child.
Oh, no. But look, I do think that there is something to be had for this like reject aspect. I know that we're thinking like maybe we're being too led down the clone trail, but I do like it, and they are continuing to give clone clues. The pineapple thing is throwing me off too, because pineapples are one of the fruits you can clone. You can graft them basically into new fruit. And have sex with. Okay. All right, Steve.
I forgot to mute.
Wait. Steve, are you saying you can't have sex with other fruit? Because I got news for you, man.
Was talking about wrestling with in an apple orchard earlier.
Yeah. Pineapples, they naturally ring, Anthony.
You're just not trying hard enough with these other fruits,
Steve. I'm not trying to core. I'm trying to ring.
Is it the added risk that excites you of being able to stab yourself with the outer?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the only way I can feel alive.
This is not what John thought this conversation was going to look like.
This is what happens when you do a joint production with Properly Howard.
Fair enough.
You should see my eyes roll back when I eat pineapple pizza.
That is some spicy salami.
So anyway, the pineapples are clones. That's all. Look, if you are cloning pineapples, you're going to have a lot of duds and you're going to need to get rid of them. Every time you need to do a gift basket, you're going to have the pineapple front and center. Of course it involves pineapples. You know, let me just pull in David's clip here. Was a pineapple involved? That's the first thing that Mrs. Kobelvig asks. Was a pineapple involved? Because they have a surplus of them. They have a surplus of goats. I'm sure there's a big goat milk economy coming out of Lumen too.
So easily swayed.
I am so easily swayed by the pineapples.
I do like that little detail there that it seems like at the very least, there's an elaborate scheme to get us to believe in the clone theory.
Yeah.
Right? It's like either the show is all about clones or it's all about sort of throwing us off the scent with clones.
Well, this is what I was saying before about the ad that I saw. I think cloning may be very well the core of it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But I think there's so much more yet to go. I think there are layers upon layers of this.
Yeah, there are rings. There could definitely be further mysteries.
Yeah,
even if
there's okay, the clones. Then to what end? And then what does that mean? And what is the ultimate like? What is the price that has to be paid for this? And what I mean, like any Dylan is like casually okay with. Yeah, I mean, you had to kill the other team. I mean, look, I'm sure it was for good reason. You know, like it's and you know, so there is an interesting sense of that, right? But what happens if they find out? Like I think even they understand. Well, the person didn't die. They just no longer are in any. But like, what if there's bigger things at stake here? Like these innies are still sort of naive to like some of the real world problems, right? And what happens if that veil of ignorance keeps getting removed further and further? Like what's going to happen?
Is Miss Casey full-time severed or is she blank? Is she a clone and has no memory from her before?
It's her outie's in a casket.
Right. Because Mark said, I identified the body.
Well, but if Lumen controls the town, could they just swipe the body? Like,
yeah. I don't know. I think that when he says, I identified her body, immediately I thought, okay, this helps with the clone theory. And then the question is, which is the clone?
The death.
Oh, the dead one.
Did he identify a clone?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure.
But he didn't start working for Lumen until after.
Well, what if Gemma was in on it and then already, she just allowed them to clone her?
Wasn't, and they already had a plan, and she was. You know, I mean, who knows?
Then you go to why them?
Mm. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess that's the central question in this. What's so special about Mark? Let me just read the Mark synopsis, and then we'll talk more about Mark. Audi Mark wakes up after yelling, "She's alive!" when he and Rickon think, which he and Rickon think refer to the just found baby Eleanor. Devin is not sure. Mr. Milchick arrives to pry the trio for information and explain the overtime contingency, promising they won't be bothered by Kobelvig again. When Devin brings up Gemma over breakfast, Mark gets angry and storms off, telling Devin he's planning to quit Lumen. The camera reveals Mr. Drummond spying on them. Mr. Milchick then tries to convince Mark to stay at Lumen with a 20% raise, which he eventually decides to do. At the end of the episode, he confronts Kobelvig and asks about Gemma before she runs him off the road in anger. What is going on with that? I mean, the fact that she ran him off the road, I will say, you know, I always say don't subvert my expectations, exceed them. I was like, all right, she's probably gonna like back up real fast and like drive away and evade him. I did not think she was going to literally just drive right into him.
I saw her as freaking out to catch him off guard to get past him. That's how I saw it. And maybe I didn't necessarily, I knew she needed to hightail it out of there. I didn't read it as she was going to potentially.
Yeah. The honking of the horn suggests get out of my way.
Oh, yeah, I don't think she was trying to kill him, but really, like, aggressive. I mean, maybe she didn't hear the Gemma thing at all because she was still stewing over the insult to her cookies.
I think she knows how bad her cookies are.
They were purposefully bad so that Mark would suffer.
They're made with breast milk.
Oh, my God. So, actually, let me bring this up. So, there's another theory that's I've seen, like, stewing around online that each of the innies represents one of the four tempers. So, Mark would be Woe because he's depressed. You have Irving with Dread since he's got that, like, fearful hallway thing. Dylan, obviously, Frolic. And Helly being, what's the other one? Malice. Because she's the one who's always like angry and attacking and trying to kill her outie. I think it tracks pretty well. And that's what I was thinking until this whole thing of they only want Mark S. That's what throws me off of that. But I do think Mark S has the Woe to Verdes, you know?
I think inner Dylan might be more Frolic. Outer Dylan, I would not say that at all. I mean, are we to infer from his story, at least from his resume, that the only reason why he may have taken the severance program is because he just needed full-time work.
Yeah, he needed insurance.
Which is crazy, right? I mean, that is such an interesting, like, of all of the ones to kind of break down, his is just like, I got nowhere else to go. I can't hold a job or whatever it might be. And so, like, that's such a, that's, to me, that's got maybe a little bit more woe to it, right? Because it's like, wow, this guy's just, he's severed. He, like, he did this controversial thing and completely upended his life. Like, he has a family that, from what I gather, sounds pretty lovely. Like his wife is, like, genuinely, like, supporting him and caring for him. But he, like, maybe part of his issue, too, is, like, he has to completely, like, he can't get a phone call from her during the day. He can't see his pictures of his kids during the day. He can't even just, like, you know, get a surprise visit from them during the day. And he probably has a pretty good family life. But in order to make it work, in order to provide for them, he has to, like, suffer being pulled away from this. And that to me was like one of the more heart-wrenching reveals in this episode. I know we're on the Mark story, but in terms of just like the woe versus frolic, any frolic maybe, Audi frolic not so much.
I don't know. He was joking around though a lot with the door guy.
Until he made a joke at the expense of doors.
Right. Yeah, doors are not really a laughing matter.
What kind of a door would you be? You know, like, what would everybody be?
I was like, the first thing I was thinking, like, revolving. And then, like, when he said pocket door, I'm like, ah, yeah, you're pretty good. You got that.
But isn't that such a good metaphor for severance, is that you totally just tuck yourself away for 8 hours?
Yeah. Yep. My daughter mentioned that. I thought, oh, that's a nice little motif.
What about a garage door?
Garage door was my second.
Oh yeah.
For just a couple days, I think it'd be fun to be Jim Morrison.
Oh.
So which days? That I think that depends a lot.
John, who was the person who brought up the four different tempers?
Oh, nobody from our Discord or anything. I just saw that somewhere.
No, I had dug that up.
Okay. I like that on a literary...
On my season one rewatch, as I was getting to the end of it, I caught that. Because then I read the Macro Data Refiner's Handbook from the Lexington Letter right as I was finishing my season one rewatch. And it was like right there.
So I like this theory on like as a theme, like in order to sort of bring an interesting theme into the story. I don't necessarily like it as a plot device.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean matching them one-to-one characters.
That's right. Yeah, I think that there's it's nice aesthetically to have that symmetry, you know, she's definitely malice, he's definitely woe, you know, all of that business. I don't know if it has much impact on the plot of the show.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I think that's fine. Especially, although I'm with you, especially now that they only want Marker. I if they don't need anybody else, then I don't think it matters.
Although Mr. Drummond does have the word frolic tattooed on the webbing of the hand of his...
You'll never guess where woe is tattooed.
I got an idea. going back to sort of this concept of, you know, maybe they're unfinished versions. I mean, let's look at some of these names. I mean, I know Rebecca changed her name, of course, but then you have like names like Rickon. You know, it just like they're not regular names. Like, was he Rick N?
Right, Devin. Right,
right.
Like maybe yeah. At one point, she was Dev, last name N.
Right, like same thing. With like he was Rick, and then N, and then now once they're out, they're just like their full name. Oh, they're Rickon. That's Devin.
But if he's not a real person, how could he come up with gems like they cannot crucify you if your hand is a fist?
Well, because have you talked to ChatGPT?
Bullies are nothing but bull and lies.
That's pretty good. No, that is what all I watched. My poor wife was falling asleep last night because I came home late from a realtor seminar where I was the funniest guy in the room. And so we're watching this and she's like, just, you can't pause it and rewind it a bunch because I'm falling asleep. But man, when she was like, Devin says, I agree with Rickon. And Rickon says, or she's all, Rickon is right. And he says, I agree. I thought that was hysterical. Like, I mean, Rickon's got some great ones, but that particular, and the way it's just all within the flow of conversation. Uh-huh. It's, again, going back to what we talked about before was how we really appreciated that the show respects the intelligence of its audience. And that's like, to me, just one of those examples where it's like, either catch it or you don't. And it really doesn't matter because we're moving on.
Shout out to Jen Tullock, who plays Devon. I'm really enjoying her character a lot and what she's bringing as an actor to her role. But man, that diner scene and between Mark and her, the change that Mark goes through, that Adam Scott is as an actor, is to go from his happy-go-lucky Indian to this really woeful character on the outside is just an incredible character. And one of the things that struck me in the episode was he has beta fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and then they were playing with that. They're playing with that in the season one and in the season two credit sequence of there's two, you know, the two characters of the two Marks.
Well, and the idea why you have to keep beta fish separate is, you know, because one will kill the other. And in order for them both to exist, they have to be separate, right? And I think that's just, it's a fascinating visual. And diner scene was so powerful. It was so, it was so meaningful, and it really worked in terms of, like, you're seeing him, he's ready to quit. But he doesn't have, he's missing a third of his life to process grief. Mm. So he's so far behind the idea of getting over it. And then so Milchek can still push the Gemma buttons, and then the idea that there's a version of himself that is happy and has moved on, even if it's because it has no recollection of it. That idea is like he, as a selling point, is just absolutely fascinating. And the idea that in order to make that happen, the outer version of himself has to be in pain like this much longer because he has that much less time to process it. And and so all he really does is he just kind of mires he's condemned to not get over it because he doesn't have much of a life outside of that. It is really like, it's so compelling. And from a narrative perspective, it makes a lot of sense. Like, well, now I know why Mark gets back in there because he's just sad as hell.
Yeah.
and
I think it totally works. I think that there is another way you can look at this. He's decided not to go back, right? All the way back to first season, he's gotten hints from PD. He's even heard himself in the break room. He's considered, you know, he has that whole plot with Ragabi. He knows Severance is weird. He's already suspicious. He can't bring himself to believe that his wife is actually alive. So that's it's really hurtful for him. And the hurt sort of registers as anger. He's not going to go back. But then when Milchek shows up and says, you're happy, you're funny, you've found love.
It's the love line that gets
I me. Think what I think in that mind, he thinks, oh,
maybe Gemma is.
Maybe Gemma is down there, and maybe that's who I've fallen in love with.
Yeah, because he doesn't, because he says with who, and he doesn't say.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. And I think that maybe he thinks I should go back, because even if there's a 1% chance that Gemma's alive down there, I would probably fall in love with her.
Which is a whole brand new thought for him. Only at the beginning of this episode, like prior to his sister and Rickon telling him, like, you know, questioning whether, you know, who he was shouting she's alive about. So this is all new for him, right? Like it's still developing. It's as a thought, it's still developing in his mind.
Yeah. I think it also very well could be that he just still needs a crutch or whatever. But I do think that there's something about the idea that he found love that intrigues him enough to return.
You don't think he forgot about the PD narrative like most of us did?
The whole thing. You know, there's this other thing that comes up. Devon mentions really briefly in passing that I guess you can petition with a lawyer to talk to your innie.
Where was that?
In the diner scene.
It was in the diner.
Okay, okay.
She's like, oh, you know, maybe we should speak to him again. You know, whatever, as a lawyer, maybe we could. I know you can petition. Mm. So, I just, is that true? Do they ever grant that petition? They don't grant the resignations.
And how could you, right? Like, in order to do that, you would have to either work the overtime contingency, or you'd have to have some sort of communication via Lumen, right? And there are multiple contingencies. So that's the other thing, is we don't know how all of those play out, right? Like, are any of those something that can actually be controlled by Lumen?
Who has no punishments.
No punishments. And interesting that he uses the wellness checks as kind of a carrot for Mark. And first thing that happens when any Mark walks in, he realizes the wellness center's gone.
I have to compliment the writers for backing last episode of all Innie and then this episode all Outie. Just beautiful construction that mirrors the Innie Outie itself, right? And it's just, it was so good. It was so smart to start the season this way.
Well, just the how one of the things I completely appreciated and thought was great was that, like, one of the things that happened at the end once the season one ends, you're like, oh my gosh, what's Outie Mark going to do now that he knows that his wife is alive? And you look back at how well that was constructed and the timing and how when he comes back in and how it's like, no, you don't know that he knows that. And to pick that up was, like, to me, that was a real subtle, important reveal that added just a little bit more tension to this whole experience, because you start thinking, well, if he knows that, then what's going to happen here? It's like, well, that's how you can keep this thing moving along, because there is no definitive evidence that that's what Innie Mark was talking about. And that just, it's a little bit of a, just all these little subtle things that really show how well constructed this is and how it can keep you just off from your theories.
And to consider the fact of the, a season one filming to a season two filming, and then with all of the disruptions in between, and then the tension between Erickson and Stiller, that they're able to create this cohesive, artistic, and it's science fiction, whatever words you want to throw on top of it, but to have a cohesive vision and put that on screen, unbelievable, and just phenomenal.
Can we agree too that there was no in-universe time passed between, Mark just took off the weekend and then went back to work. Totally. There was no 5 months like they were telling me.
Nope. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Five months is fraudulent, as is the paper. The paper was, they invented the paper and then redacted the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, just the mind, just the mind games that they're playing on these people.
Did you see the original photo that they Photoshopped them into? People found it online. It's an Eisenhower motorcade.
Oh, it is. Uh-huh. So, okay. Nice. Oh,
awesome. So, and if you look at the four of them, that's just their staff faces. Picture. No, that's just their staff picture.
Oh, they just graphed their
same exact
photo.
Poses. They just put that right. Because obviously they had to get, like, the intern to do the Photoshopping because it's overnight.
Because the intern.
Yep. That's awesome. Why Cobell's name is still on the computer. That's why the wellness center is, like, haphazardly taken down.
Yeah.
It explains a lot. Of course. I know there were questions about that in the feedback last week, but yeah, for sure now.
Okay.
I also got the sense, and this is my wife's perspective. She's like, I think that the Cobell thing on the computer wasn't just a time thing, but also they're still kind of messing with Milchick.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, this did happen on Milchick's watch.
Let's
a little passive aggressive.
Yeah, let's get some feedback, and we got a voicemail actually about Milchick. So let's hear from Karen.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, guys. This is Karen E, also known as Zero Ducks. I haven't talked to you guys since Hot D, so it's been a while, but I am back for Severance, and so excited to be back with Lorehounds. I wanted to comment on Milchick and employees of Lumen in general. So more thinking about things from a 10,000 foot view, or maybe even higher than that, I think that there are many layers to what's going on here. And one of the questions that arose in my mind with season 2, episode 1 is, how do they recruit these employees who seem to be not severed and not clones, such as Miss Cobell and Mr. Milchick. I do think that Miss Huang is probably a clone or something like that, and that Miss Casey is probably in that type of situation. But we know from Miss Cobell that she was a true believer in Egan, and that she had maybe some other reasons for willingly following this system and being an overseer of the Severed. We don't know much about Milchick, hardly anything at all. So is he a psychopath? Is he a true believer? I guess I would lean more toward true believer, because I think that it takes maybe some kind of religious zealotry to be able to do the things that he's doing with a clear conscience. I also think that just as Cobell became disillusioned, that he similarly may have some kind of a breakdown if he is in fact a religious zealot. I also think that it's interesting that they're able to find these people who believe so deeply in this construct that they've created around Keir Egan, that they are willing to torture other humans. It reminds me of Milgram. It reminds me of the Stanford Prison Experiment, that there's some bigger societal implications going on. And it also makes me question, how much does Lumen control in the Audi society? How deeply ingrained are they in the government that they're able to do these things? Is there this confluence of religion, which they've created around Keir Egan, and power? And how is that topical for today's society, particularly in the Western world in general? So all of this really big stuff is sort of going around in my mind. But then where it comes back down to detail is Milchick, who to me is the great question of the moment. Who is he? Why does he do what he does? And what are we going to see him do this season? So many other questions to come, but that's where I'm sitting right now.
I have a quick thought on this. The first is that I think most of these employees are cult followers on some level. At one point, Helena says to Milchick, "Let Keir guide your hand."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is religious language that they share in common. She doesn't have to explain what that means to him. He just kind of has this insider lingo in mind.
Which just means go on vibes.
Yes.
I think it's like, yes. I think you could read it in a couple ways. But what I'm reading it as, they have the same religious background. Mm-hmm. And it very well same could be deal. That in the same way that, you know, that the Catholic Church is both one of the biggest businesses in the world and the biggest religions in the world, you don't become a bishop in the Catholic Church unless you have a long religious devotion to the Catholic Church. I think Milchick is along these lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I agree. He has to be, as she was saying in her voicemail, he has to be a true believer to be able to do what he's doing. With a straight face, with full sincerity, to sit down. May I sit with you? And sit between Rickon and Devin and Mark Scout and answer their questions and be confident and have no doubt in his mind about the veracity of what he's doing from his worldview. Right.
Having spent a brief afternoon at the Scientology Celebrity Center, there are certain, like, because just who, like, the people I would see, the people I would interact with, sort of the newbies that would do the initial tour and show the video and walk you through some of the show and tell stuff, like, it really, there's elements of Lumen that remind me a bit of that and some of the other research I've done. This idea that you can work your way up and you'll learn more. The more mm-hmm. will be to reveal to you as you have shown proven the dedication, proven your loyalty, proven your grasp of the tenets or whatever it might be. Then you know you will gain greater access, right?
This is very. I think we've neglected to point out that particular organization in our analysis. I think it's a very apt
question. Yeah. And so I think that too, like, so when you have somebody like Milchek who, and going back to Anthony's take about like the idea of this marriage of cult and business, you could also do that by knowing all the right things to say and all the right things to do, and you could still be loyal and you could still be devoted, but you might not necessarily buy it in the same sense, which means that your behaviors and your actions might not necessarily reflect the so-called pure original vision, so to speak.
Yeah.
Where Cobell is so far over. Anyway, sorry, John.
Sure. Well, and so when there's this conversation about, and it really came to mind when Milchek is convincing Mark to come back, and he offers him money. He offers him care, and then he offers him hope. And the hope is that that doing this process will, even though it's a different part of your brain, it will impact and eventually influence your other behavior in the other part of your brain, very much like a kind of like an audit, like that someone would go through, where they would sort of go through past experience all the way down to like maybe something that was repressed. And then once you unlock that and you realize that you've been the same being forever and ever, that you then this new version of your consciousness would somehow marry the old version of your consciousness.
Just say Dune. Would
bring healing. That very much like the audit sense. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen The Master, which I think is a pretty interesting look at the auditing process. And again, having watched a video during the tour of the auditing process, that brought me to that kind of notion of being able to like, hey, one part of, once you tap into this part, the other part will then follow.
Cool. Why don't we take our last break? Then we're going to come back and wrap up the episode. And we're back. All right. So let's talk about the other two innings. I want to go pretty quick through this because I don't think there's a lot of lore here. It's mostly just details that we have to talk about. We've got Dylan who you know, he's got the ice pack on his head. Milchek goes and fires him, saying he was the aggressor in a physical altercation and he will be terminated. He interviews at Great Doors, almost gets the job before he admits he's a severed worker and faces discrimination because of it. Milchek arrives with a pineapple and he returns to Lumen. I think we kind of did the door thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about him a bunch already.
Yeah. We also have Irving, which we didn't talk about at all. After denying anything out of the ordinary, Irv is fired by Milchek. He finds his innie's map to Bert, and later he calls someone from a payphone to report, "My innie got the message." Bert watches him from a car. He returns to Lumen. So what's Bert doing?
Yeah. So he was pounding on the door. We never saw the resolution of that, if I am correct.
No, right. He had to get from Bert's door to home.
Yeah.
Some way.
But you know, I mean, somebody's pounding on your door and you're packing up to go on vacation or what have you. What is Bert suspicious? Yeah, like what is Bert's point of view on this?
Bert's don't like, know. That was my brother. We're just very friendly.
We love each other.
Why the payphone?
Why the payphone, indeed? He doesn't want to be monitored, but what if Lumen owns the town?
This I love this show.
Yes, but he's using a payphone.
There's a payphone in this world. Mr. Milchek has like a smartphone thing, and yeah, they're like accepting people with chips, and he's using a payphone. I love it.
He's using a payphone, suggesting that he thinks maybe his own phones might be tapped.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they are tapping the payphone. Maybe the payphone only exists in this world to, you know, for this purpose, right? But in terms of what Irv's perception is, he's trying to be careful. He thinks his own phone might be tapped.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why he wants to use the payphone.
Well, and he had all the secret stuff of with names and everything in his trunk at his house, like hidden. So like he's obviously paranoid.
Yeah.
And stuff going on. Yeah, yeah. So he's got a plan. I mean, obviously if Innie has the message, it's kind of fascinating that like Irv, who the Innie that we knew all year the first time around was like the sort of the good soldier and
yeah, the loyalist,
loyalist. Mm-hmm. And then like it turns out that he might be the most subversive in you know, of the four.
But he's probably a soldier at home, right? Maybe that's just sort of his ingrained follow orders,
perhaps, right? Yeah, so that's what you're seeing is the version of him
to challenge it.
This is a little bit what,
and he shows that, yeah.
This is a little bit what Nicole and I talk about on the bonus episode is like how, you know, if you, there are parts of you and there are parts of your memory that are part of you that aren't part of your personality. And like, how do different things emerge? That's one of the interesting questions of the show is like what fundamental characteristics are part of you, you know, Mark being upbeat and smiley. Was he also upbeat and smiley when he was an outie, you know, before he became severed and when he was living his normal life without having suffered the tragedy of the death of a spouse?
You know, right, what, to go back what, to the four, maybe he was frolic the whole time, but
yeah,
just this instance is what made him woe.
Or Helly is like her, when she's inside, she's a hellcat and she's trying to escape and she's like vicious and she's willing to push it all the way. But that also makes her probably a great Lumon employee once she's under control and she has her mm-hmm. sort of, you know, that part of her personality under wraps. So, but it's still there. It's still present. So, and what do we got? Irving Bailiff, Dylan George, Mark Scout. So we found out Irv's last name.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Somebody pointed out that two of them are occupations or like roles, Scout and Bailiff.
Bailiff.
It's interesting. Interesting. Yeah. But then George breaks that pattern.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's much more to talk about this, but I guess we just got to watch what Bert does. Maybe they're in a throuple now. Who knows? Can I, you know, speaking of, isn't it funny that Milchick says to Mark, oh, Cobell was trying to have a throuple with your Audi. And now we think that Mark is going to have a throuple with Helly's innie and Audi. He was just predicting the future. Maybe that was an Easter egg, though, for us to like hint at, you know?
True, true. When I saw Bert follow him, my initial thought first time watching it, oh, yeah, he's probably got to figure out who's that guy banging on my door. But then when I watched the second episode again, like going, okay, what if I just lean into some of these clone things and the idea that there may be multiple versions of people that aren't identical and that being part of the experiment, right? Like part of the reason why they have to keep experimenting is because they've tried to remake Kier, but he's not quite Kier. And so that's why I'm like, okay, well, maybe Rick and Mr. Drummond look similar, maybe because they're sort of the same ooze. Like, okay, well, maybe that explains why when you got this great mirror thing at the Great Doors interview between Dylan and Mr. Sabrisa. And then I'm like, what if Bert's an older version of Irv, and maybe that's where the attraction came from. So I started going down all that kind of that would be that probably file that into like maybe a hot take.
All right, he's kissing himself. That's the hot take.
Yeah, he's in a throuple of one.
I mean, Dan G asked, is there something about being severed that allows you to do this work? And I think that's a good question.
I think that's an interesting question.
Like, could Mark just put together his wife again, or does he need to be severed? Does he need to be a blank slate?
Well, again, on the bonus episode, Nicole talks about different kinds of memory and that there are different types of memories that there's declarative memories, there's semantic memories. I forget all the other ones, but maybe with certain kinds of memories present in your mind, you can't get that kind of focus or transcendence into the work to get that hyper focus if you've got all your other personality bits, you know, floating around and getting in the way of you focusing on the, because you're going off an intuitive feeling, right? These numbers make you feel something. And if your part of your intellectual mind is too busy with, oh, I got to pay the bills and I got to get the kid to the vet or get the kid to the vet, get the dog to the vet and pick up my kid from the, you know, daycare. Those kinds of things are going to intrude on your ability to
get to the baby wipes. Well, yes, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I'm doing a podcast right now. I probably should be working. if I were severed, I wouldn't know who you guys are, and I would be, and I'd actually be more productive.
Much more productive. Oh my God. I think, well, yeah, we shouldn't talk about people's real jobs on the podcast in case any employees.
Fortunately, nobody I work with is listening to this, and if they are, you know where to find me.
That happened once. I actually posted something on a Facebook comment and got a friend in trouble because we were playing hooky. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, it was, she was like, oh, it's fine. I hated that job anyway.
Well, let's talk about other people doing their jobs. We have a couple meetings with Heli, Milchick, Drummond, and Natalie. We didn't see her since last season. She was the one who fired Cobell, I believe, right?
Yep.
And they decide to send Mark back to work with an overseas floater and two employees from Branch 5X. After Mark's plea, which is on a tape recorder for some reason, Mr. Drummond reports that the board is giving Mark what he wants. Branch 5X. Everyone went, huh? When he said from Branch 5X. And totally. We remember Mark W. said, I thought I had been permanently retired. So what happened there?
And then he's pissed because he gets laid off after 3 days.
Disgruntled Bob Balaban.
Or did he get laid off, right? Bob Balaban.
So I'm sorry. Is 5X, is that supposed to mean something to me?
Yeah, that's the Mark W. Balaban says that he and Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
We're from Branch 5X before.
Right. Shut down. but that's the first time we've ever heard that phrase.
Correct.
Right.
That
right.
is correct.
Right. So that's just an ongoing mystery I wanted to flag.
And everybody did go, doink, 5X? Like, what? Are you crazy? Like, that was a shit show.
You're going to bring back the 5X. Again, that's, I think, goes back to this, at least my theory, that there are a lot of, like, this whole thing. And again, because we see little baby Kira crawling in the
credit,
the credits, and it's like, and obviously it's all sort of hyper realized and everything, but the idea that it's a baby with the old man Kira head, like, kind of gives me the idea that maybe that would that happened, right? Like, I mean, they've been trying to recreate Kira, and every time it's like, man, the formula just keeps on getting screwed up. We tried all these things, so we just created a town full of rejects. Oh, and then remember what happened in 5X. Oh, you remember that first place we tried with the where we used brooms and plates? You know, we wouldn't put as much money into that. You know, but
well,
we found out
the other guy's a floater. Dario is a floater.
Yes,
so he would go overseas and move to different places.
Well, and something to think about too in terms of that budget. I think that maybe I'm doing exactly what I'm saying that they're probably trying to get us to do is. If there were animatronic ones at 5X, but there weren't animatronic, there's not animatronic ones at where Mark is, and that one's still going, but there were plates and broomsticks where Dario was, like, what does that say about either time or budget or how long these people live? Like, time, it becomes such an odd thing in this, and those three realities are existing in the, and Dario's probably the youngest of all of them.
Yeah.
So how does it work that he's in a place that, like, so it mustn't have been a time, could have been a budget thing, but it could be, it just adds so much layer of, like, what the hell is going on?
What is going on? I think we all have that question after this episode, and it's going to be an exciting season to go through. Anybody else have other thoughts on this episode before we head on?
Yeah, did you notice the Latin phrase on the back of
Milchick's? I translated it.
Yeah. What was your translation?
Google translated it for me, in fact. And I posted this on my Blue Sky and I threw it in our thing. Remedium hom inibus, a remedy for men.
Yeah.
So
that was in the first season too.
Yeah. So this is a phrase that you could easily read as a remedy, like a cure for all humans everywhere. You know, whatever ails them, we're going to cure the humans. Or you could read it as, what ails you? It's humanity. Well, you're going to need a cure for that ailment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is just something that specific to Milchick or if this is something that's supposed to.
No, Mark's car had it as well in season one.
Interesting.
So it's the license plates for this area.
It's for Cure PA.
To that town. I love the idea that it's cure. Like, it's also translated cure for man. Cure. I think it's fascinating.
I like it.
Also, I don't, because I have to look at everything, including newspapers that are just red herrings. I want to know Is Dieter's Brother a band? I know that it says Dieter's Brother live, no minimum, at one of the bars that Milchek speeds by. And I just can't help but thinking, who's Dieter's Brother? Is he a one-man show? Is that a band? I have to know more about Dieter's Brother.
I don't think we'll ever know.
I just want to call out with this license plate. It's not a state license plate.
Correct.
Suggesting that this guy's the entire campus is the town.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
mm-hmm.
this is a vehicle that only stays on campus.
And Helena says in her apology, or her contrition video, she says, our friends and allies. And allies is a really weird term to use. Allies are political, geopolitical, right?
Or in terms of advocacy.
Right, but I'm saying, like, they have control. They have allies, right? You know, we're allied with these things. So do they? How much do they have their control? Are they a special tax district like Disney is in Florida?
Interesting, yeah.
About the a remedy for men, wherever you put the comma, if you do put one, it reminds me of How to Serve Man in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Shout out to every single sci-fi film ever podcast, ooh, where it's the cookbook, right? It's not how to be of service to man, but it's how to cook man.
Oh,
which I think the Simpsons did a spoof off of.
If we're gonna do that, is not She's Alive at least an homage to Frankenstein?
Yeah. That's good.
Ooh.
That's good.
Ooh.
I'm going to be just collecting all these license plates. Let's see. Milchek LFS 159.
Yep.
Mark YCL 624. I think Irv's is HDR 559. So, Anthony, could you just figure that one out?
Yeah, I think that this is going to reduce to a prime number at some point, right?
Numerology. I think there's only one needle drop on this one. Young Man's Blues, 1957, by Mose Allison, who was a really influential American jazz and blues pianist, singer, and songwriter. And The Who would regularly cover this song at live shows and concerts and stuff like that, and almost made the song more famous than the original. But then a number of other bands have also covered it. But it's the one song we get when Dylan's driving to go to the interview.
So with that, we could get the idea of most people are familiar with the cover than they are the original.
Right.
And that would go along with some of the cloning concepts that we might be having here.
Oh, good call. Good pull.
I like it. All right. Let's talk about what else we're doing on the network. But first, let me just say, if you want to write in, thank you, Nancy, for collecting all the feedback. Severance@thelorehounds.com is where you can get emails to us. You can go on the Discord. Nancy pulls some from there. And, just chat with us. We have a lot of fun.
And voicemails.
Send us voicemails in the link tree. You can find us all on all the socials and all that. You can send voicemails. Just take a voice memo with your phone or something. David, can you just tell me what's going on the network? Maybe I should have Anthony and Steve talk about their own podcast first.
Yeah, if you are interested in the weird, wild world of Lumen, you're going to be even more interested in the weird, wild world of Cocktail. What it was, the actual factual life of bartenders in the 80s who sometimes go to the tropical island. Sometimes they go to art shows and punch out the artist. This is a very strange movie. It's a horribly made movie. I hated this movie, but I love talking about this movie with Steve. Gosh.
Yeah, Tom Cruise's Audi is punching out sculptors, and his Innie is in Jamaica wooing Elizabeth Shue.
You know, this ties into Severance. Did you hear that Adam Scott said that he didn't train at all for the running scenes? He just watched Tom Cruise running in suits. He said Tom Cruise runs in suits better than anyone in the world.
Oh, I see it now. Yeah, that Christian Bale used Tom Cruise as his inspiration for Patrick Bateman.
Oh, that's funny. David, what else is going on the network?
I have no idea.
Okay. Never mind the music. You heard from Nicole on the bonus episode. They just did a bonus app of their own on the on the Grammys.
Yep.
So check that out. They got plenty of weekly podcasts on music and psychology. Great stuff. We have Radioactive Ramblings doing their Red Rising read-through and doing their studio.
I think they just finished.
Red Rising?
Yeah, there was a final episode, I thought, posted.
Oh, for the first book, but they're going on.
Oh, is it multiple books? Okay,
it's like 5 books, yeah. Okay. So they got plenty of time. Okay. You can go listen to that series still. And they've got their Studio Ghibli, I'll finally say it so nobody yells at me today, movies that they're covering. Also, Wolf Shift Dust just wrapped up Silo. I think they've got like one other bonus episode coming out.
Right. And I think Alicia was actually talking to one of the writers, and hopefully something will...
She knows Hugh Howey. Don't you remember my impression?
No,
I'm Alicia. I know Hugh Howey. That's the writer of Silo.
She, I believe her and Jean have a lot of stuff coming up for comics versus, because we've got a whole bunch of Marvel shows this year. So,
yep.
If you are of the comic book fandom type, then hold on, because there's a lot coming down the pipeline.
And if you're only on the Severance feed, don't forget to subscribe to the main Lorehounds and Properly Howard's feeds. You already heard what Properly Howard's doing. Lorehounds are going to be doing White Lotus coming up, Wheel of Time, Andor, The Last of Us. Plenty of content to come, plenty of bonus stuff. Don't forget to stick around to hear a sample of the bonus episode that you can get on the season pass or on the regular Patreon or Supercast subscriptions. Until then, I'll leave you with this quote. Your so-called boss may own the clock that taunts you from the wall, but my friends, the hour is yours.
Hey, Nicole, how are you enjoying Severance season 2 so far?
I'm loving season 2 of Severance. I can't wait to explore the brain science of what they're doing in this hypothetical universe.
Speaking of brain science, you and I know I said, 10, 15 minutes should be fine. We just talked for half an hour about brain science. And I don't know, that seems sort of on brand, but you were talking about the limbic system and the different types of memories.
Yeah, the limbic system is really where our soul is seated in our brain, both with the hippocampus and the amygdala and its relationship to the frontal lobe and how our brain is structured in terms of how it manipulates and forms memories. It was really cool to explore the pineal gland, especially, and how in this Severance world, I really feel like those are the areas of the brain that are being manipulated in order to make this innie outie personality shift happen.
And you noted that on the x-ray, when they're showing the chip insertion process, that from what you saw, it seems like they put it in a region of the brain that would be accurate for how we understand the brain today.
For sure. The limbic system is right in the middle of our brain. It's surrounded by all the different lobes, the temporal lobe and the parietal lobe. And the limbic system's right in the middle of it all. And in the brain scan, when they showed the chip inserted, it was right where the hippocampus and the pineal gland would live. And I jumped out of my chair. I was like, oh my God, it's real. It's really happening. And it really makes me think of the Neuralink technology and how far that can go, which is a different conversation, but interesting for sure.
Nonetheless, yeah. Well, great. Well, that conversation is available to our regular subscribers as well as anyone who's purchased the season pass. So if you're interested in hearing Nicole and I get real nerdy on the brain, go check out either of those options, whatever works best for you. I know we're going to be talking to Mark, your co-host from Nevermind the Music. I believe next week we're going to talk a little bit about the music, the background music, as well as the needle drops of the show. And then I'm looking forward to having you and Mark both together later on down the season, and we can all kind of come together and nerd out a little bit more and do maybe a mini Nevermind the Music podcast of what you and Mark do on your music psychology related podcast.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Sounds great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
This podcast is a joint production of The Lorehound and Properly Howard. Click the link tree in the show notes for links to more podcasts, our Discord server, and ways to support the show. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Is it DeFranco to Beans?